rare use of his alias. His real name was Steve Thompson. The Kent Black bullshit was an effort to make him sound more like the jet-set private contractor he'd always wanted to be. In truth, he was a poor Montana kid who had grown up with fewer creature comforts than he had here in Africa. His father had been a crazy survivalist who'd spent half his time preparing for the end of the world, and the other half beating on his son. That was, until he'd disappeared. There hadn't been so much as a hint of foul play, and no body was ever recovered. So the younger Thompson, now Black, had been cleared and shuffled off to a foster home. He'd eventually become an Army Ranger and top-notch sniper. The problem was that he'd seen his father in every commander he'd ever had, and eventually was booted out of the military for insubordination. Rapp had actually considered taking Black on when he hit the street. But it wasn't an idea that lasted long. The kid was gifted, but also unpredictable and in possession of a seriously broken moral compass. So, while perhaps not CIA material, he was just the man for the shit detail the president had handed out. "Seriously, Mitch, you don't want me in South Sudan? I'll disappear. How about Borneo? Or Siberia? I could—" "Shut up." He fell silent, fidgeting in his chair like a school kid called in front of the principal. "Do you want a job?" The young man didn't bother to hide his surprise.
"What do you mean?"
"Was I not clear?"
"Word on the street is that you left the agency."
"That's right."
"So you've gone private?"
"Something like that."
"And you want to work with me?"
"I did, but now I'm starting to change my mind."
"Don't do that,"
Black said, leaping from his seat. "I'm in." "Do you want to know what the job is?"
"Not really."
That was starting to become a theme. "How about the pay?"
"I'm not worried. You always take care of your guys."
He took a few steps in no particular direction, a wide grin spreading across his face.
"Fucking A. I'm working with Mitch Rapp."
Chapter 25. The Principality of Monaco. Prince Talal bin Musaid stepped from his brother's jet and walked unsteadily down the steps. He didn't even bother to berate the men handling his expensive leather luggage, instead focusing on getting to the tarmac safely. His arrival in Monaco and numerous glasses of Hennessy had failed to calm him. He'd been forced to lie about his plane being in for repairs to prompt his brother to send his own. In fact, it was in perfect working condition, but bin Musaid had no way to fuel it or pay landing fees. His bank accounts, even the hidden ones, had been completely drained. His credit cards had been cancelled due to fraudulent activity. His lines of credit had been maxed out, and most of his significant assets had liens against them, either from the loans he'd used to buy them, or for taxes he couldn't be bothered to pay. If his brother had refused to fetch him, it was unlikely he could have put his hands on enough cash to buy a ticket on a commercial carrier. A black Mercedes pulled up in front of him, but instead of his brother appearing from the back, his brother's wife stepped out from the driver's seat.
"Your Highness," she said with a polite smile, "it's so good to see you."
He hadn't laid eyes on her in more than a year, and that was very much by design. When his brother had begun seeing this Spanish commoner, bin Musaid had understood. She was young, stunningly beautiful, and, he assumed, good in bed. But then he'd married the bitch. She was his only wife, and as far as anyone knew, he didn't even keep a mistress. Bin Musaid watched in silence as she oversaw the loading of his luggage and then indicated to the passenger seat. Instead, he got in the back. His brother had been disinherited for his relationship with her, but he cared little. He'd made an enormous amount of money in European real estate and had no need of the family's support.
I'm sorry that Hossein couldn't pick you up personally, she said, starting the car and pulling away. He's stuck at the office.
Her Arabic was still barely intelligible, and listening to it made his anger grow. He had no choice but to swallow it, though. His brother had been largely estranged from the family for more than a decade, and in that time it had become clear where his loyalties lay. With this infidel and their three westernized children.
What brings you to Monaco? She asked.
It was likely that his brother was aware that he came there often, but never contacted them. He'd undoubtedly put the woman up to finding out what had changed.
Bin Musaid didn't bother to respond.
Ali Nassar had done a skillful job of sowing doubt about Bin Musaid's involvement in the Rabat affair, but the king was not entirely convinced. That doubt put the prince in a very dangerous position, and made his brother's independent life in Europe a gift from Allah. Bin Musaid was unwilling to tell either the king or Nassar about what had happened to his fortune, out of fear of what a criminal investigation might find. His brother's lawyers and accountants would be in a position to make discreet inquiries, and Bin Musaid could use what they learned to plan what came next. If this was a simple matter of hackers, the king could exert considerable pressure on the relevant financial institutions to return the money lost through their incompetent security measures. If it was something more, then other arrangements would have to be made.
"Will you be staying long?" his sister-in-law probed.
"Be still, woman!"
He immediately saw the error of his outburst and softened his tone.
"I'm sorry. It was a long flight."
"No, not long."
It was likely a lie. The more he considered it, the more improbable it seemed that this was the work of hackers. Not only was the attack too thorough, but some of it seemed designed solely to anger and humiliate him. Most of his money had just disappeared so completely that it seemed to have never existed. The exception was the $3 million or so dollars that had been donated in his name to Jewish charities and girls' schools. No, the answer would likely be much more dangerous and needed to be hidden from his brother for as long as possible. He wouldn't tolerate any risk to his wife and children in order to hide a brother he barely spoke to. Bin Musaid gazed out the window at the opulent cityscape that he knew so well. What would his brother's people discover? The CIA was the most obvious perpetrator, but Ali Nassar seemed convinced that the pathetic American president would never authorize a move against a prominent Saudi royal. The Jews? The Iranians? Or was he being naive? Nassar had been angered by his personal involvement in the Rabat operation, but had become enraged when he discovered that the CIA had been tracking the exchange. Was it possible that this was his doing? A punishment for Rabat? And if so, had it been authorized by the king? While it was hard to imagine, it was even feasible that he was actually in physical danger. This was another reason his brother was a gift from God. He maintained a security detail, and the presence of his wife and children at the house would discourage at least the Americans from making a move. Unfortunately, it also meant that Bin Musaid would not only have to tolerate their presence, but court it. He forced himself to lean forward between the seats.
"How have you been, Carmen?"
"Me? Fine," she sputtered, understandably surprised by the question.
"And the children? I'm very much looking forward to spending time with them while I'm here."
Chapter 26. Juba, South Sudan. Rapp opened the door to the office at the back of Kent Black's church and felt a blast of cold air. Still interested in testing Claudia's abilities, he'd put her in charge, and she continued to impress. Not only did she have a projector hanging from a bloom of wires in the ceiling, she'd managed to fix the AC. Chairs were lined up along the wall and contained the rogues gallery that had replaced Scott Coleman's flawless and unwaveringly loyal team. The desk had been cleared of Black's junk and now held a bucket filled with ice and beer. Where she'd found ice in a city that couldn't even keep the lights on was beyond him. But why look a gift horse in the mouth? Rapp grabbed a bottle and took a seat at the rear. He still wasn't comfortable having these people behind him. Claudia nodded in his direction, looking a little nervous. He didn't react other than to twist the top off his brew. At that moment, she wasn't the woman he was sleeping with. She was his logistics coordinator. Time to get this briefing rolling. She dimmed the lights and used a remote to turn to the projector's first image.
This is a 3-month-old shot of Prince Talal bin Musaid. He's the nephew of King Faisal, the son of his favorite sister. She and bin Musaid's father are both dead, and he was left with access to a considerable fortune. Sadly for him, that fortune disappeared a few days ago, and is now in accounts controlled by Mitch.
No shit, Black said. How much are we talking about?
Rapp was about to tell him to shut the fuck up, but then decided to see if Claudia would let him sidetrack her meeting.
Let's stay focused, okay, Kent?
She switched to an image of an impressive mansion built into a steep hillside. It was surrounded by a wall and had an imposing gate, but both were more architectural statements than security measures.
We've gotten lucky. Bin Musaid left Saudi Arabia recently and is staying here with his brother in Monaco. It appears that he's told his brother what happened because he's assembled a team of investigators to try to trace the missing money.
Will they be successful? Azarov asked.
No. What do we know about the brother and the house?
Donatella said.
By all reports, Hossein bin Musaid is a successful and honest businessman. Relatively secular, married to a Christian, 3 children of early school age. He gives a lot of money to charities, none of which are political or religious in any way. As far as the house goes, there are 2 security guards and another man who seems to function primarily as a driver. None are former military or particularly well-trained. Basically, what you'd expect from a wealthy, well-liked man involved in legal enterprises.
So, civilians, Black said. How are we treating them?
Like gold, Rapp responded. None of them gets so much as a scratch.
That isn't going to make life too easy. Does bin Musaid ever leave the house?
Not since he arrived, Claudia responded.
What are we talking about then? Black said. Breaching in broad daylight when the kids and the brother aren't there? Maybe drugging the guards? You'd need a calculator to count all the things that could go wrong.
We're not taking him at the house, Rapp said.
But Claudius said he never leaves.
Rapp finished his beer and went for another. Talal bin Musaid isn't going to spend the rest of his life playing with his nieces. He's going to want booze, and he's going to want women.
I tend to agree, Azarov said. And if he's a wealthy Saudi, it's likely that he spent a great deal of time in Monaco. Do we have any information on his habits when he's been there in the past?
I'm glad you asked, Claudia said,
switching to a slide of a building surrounded by obscenely expensive cars.
This is Terry's, a very exclusive club on a hill overlooking Monte Carlo. The prince is a member, and it's normally where he spends his evenings.
I've been there a number of times as a guest of my consulting company's clients, Azarov said. There are a few armed bouncers out front, but their role is more to keep out undesirables than to handle anything serious. Cameras inside. No other security that I'm aware of.
Can we get in? Rapp asked.
Not without being a member or being accompanied by a member.
Then let's get a membership. Impossible, Claudia said. There's a waiting list 100 people long, and most of them have more money than bin Musaid did. If you're so sure he's going there, why not snatch him off the road? Black said.
I know how you men like to break things, Donatella interjected, but let's not make this any harder than it is. Unless this is very different from the clubs I've been to. Beautiful women don't need a membership. I'll go in, strike up a conversation with the prince, and he'll invite me to a hotel. Then it's just a matter of a quick jab with a needle.
I don't think that's going to work, Claudia said.
Why not?
Because while you're right about beautiful women getting around the membership rules, those women tend to be half your age.
Rap tensed, but the ice pick stayed in Donatella's designer purse. Instead, she just waved a hand dismissively.
Bland children.
She was right, Rap knew. No one was going for some gangly kid if Donatella Ron was showing them attention. Unfortunately, there was no way in hell he could say that out loud.
I don't like the idea of you going in alone, he offered instead.
She reached back and put a hand on his knee, a move that was undoubtedly intended to get Claudia's attention. And based on her expression, it worked.
Maybe you should come in with me, Mitch. It would be like old times.
I believe Donatella's plan to be a reasonable one, Azarov said, but with one change. It should be me, not Mitch, who goes with her. The clientele of Terry's includes a lot of people in the extraction industry. It won't be long before someone appears that I know. When they do, I can just go in with them.
I'm not convinced, Claudia said. Based on my research, the women Bin Musaid's been involved with tend to be a lot younger and a lot blonder.
Probably less Jewish, too, Donatella said. It's not a problem.
But what are we arguing about? Black said, unintentionally bailing Rap out. There isn't going to be a guy in there that wouldn't cut his left nut off to get Donatella in the sack. This is a no-brainer.
And if you're wrong? Claudia asked.
Then we'll move on to Plan B, Rap said. But I don't see any drawbacks here. If Donatella blows it, she and Grisha have a couple of drinks and we go home.
How are we going to cover?
Her voice faded at the sound of vehicles roaring up to the front of the church. Everyone got to their feet, and Black went for the door.
Claudia, you're going out the back, Rap said. Donatella, go with her.
What are you talking about? Donatella protested.
Shut up. I'm holding you personally responsible for Claudia's safety. Are you listening? Do you understand what I'm saying?
She frowned and looked over at the younger woman. Don't worry. I won't let anything happen to your little French girl.
By the time he and Azarov entered the main section of the church, Black was already unlocking the main doors. He started to pull one back, and it was immediately shoved inward with enough force to almost knock him off his feet. A flood of locals in dirty fatigues rushed in, spreading out and aiming their assault rifles in what seemed to be random directions. They were smart enough to worry about potential threats, but too young and poorly trained to know where to look for them. A few moments later, a more senior man in slightly less grimy camo entered. He was obviously in charge, but had the look of someone who had gained his rank by being older and more brutal than the children he led, instead of being more competent. Either way, his ragtag troops were clearly afraid of him. While their guns had settled on Rap, Azarov, and Black, their attention remained on their commander.
Nanomi, Black said after he'd regained his balance. Great to see you. How's Abdo doing? They tell me he has a touch of malaria.
He heard you met with Karim, the African said, that you are going to stop selling us guns.
Why would I do that?
You're my best customer and Karim's an asshole. I've got you guys covered like always.
Then I want to buy.
Black let out a low whistle.
My inventory's wiped out right now. But I have a shipment coming in soon, and when I do, you'll be the first guy I call.
The African grabbed Black by the hair and yanked his head back. Rap moved his hand subtly toward the gun beneath his shirt, but didn't reach for it.
In his peripheral vision, he saw Azeroth do the same.
Or maybe you won't call, the African shouted. Maybe you're trying to starve us of weapons so Karim can massacre us.
He pulled out a massive combat knife and held it to Black's neck. Ramp didn't react. It was all for show. Nanomi wasn't there to kill his boss's arms dealer, just to provide him with a little motivation.
That's not true, Black said emphatically. In fact, those two guys back there are my suppliers. I was just placing an order when you showed up.
The African released him and started toward Azeroth as Black fell to the floor.
Who are you? He demanded.
Azeroth bowed his head respectfully.
I'm Grisha. A Russian?
Yes, sir.
And is what Kent says true? Are you here to sell him weapons?
I am, sir.
Nanomi turned and strode toward Rapp.
And you? Who are you?
Rapp just stared back at him.
I asked you a question, he said, bringing the knife up.
They didn't have time for this shit. The details for the Monaco op needed to be finalized and all the logistics needed to be ironed out before Bin Musaid ventured out of his brother's house. None of that was going to be possible with this tool nosing around.
The silence drew out long enough that Black finally filled it.
That's Mitch. He's an American. They're bidding against each other. I'm trying to get Abdo the best price.
Is that true? Nanomi asked.
By way of an answer, Rapp grabbed the man's wrist, yanking his arm out and snapping it at the elbow. When Nanomi dropped the knife, Rapp caught it, then drove it into the top of his skull hard enough that the point came through his chin. The room's reaction was easily predicted. Azeroth just stood there watching calmly. Black ran and dove over an overturned pew. Nanomi's men froze.
It was unlikely that any one of the young gorillas had ever made a decision on their own in their lives. Now they were faced with an impossible one. Did they avenge Nanomi, even if it meant killing the men who supplied their leader with weapons? Did they just ignore what had happened and go report back? Did they grab the white men and take them? No. What they desperately wanted was for someone to give them an order to follow. And Rapp was happy to oblige.
Get out, he said. Tell Abdo he'll have his weapons next week, and we're going to give him 40% off his normal deal.
They just stood there for a few seconds. Finally, one on the right started for the door. The movement seemed to break the others from their trance, and they began to follow.
Hold on, Rapp said, pointing to the corpse at his feet. Aren't you forgetting something?
Two of the boys scurried over and dragged what was left of Nanomi outside. A few moments later, they were speeding back up the road.
What the fuck? Black said, dropping the rifle he'd had stashed behind the pew. Why did you do that?
When Rapp didn't answer, Azeroth spoke up.
Nanomi wasn't sent here to threaten Kent. He was sent to get weapons. He would have stayed and held us until your shipment arrived. We don't have time for these kinds of distractions.
Distractions? That's easy for you to say. You don't live here. You don't work with these psychos. Do you know what Abdo did to the last guy who screwed him on a deal? He smeared meat on the guy's dick and then turned a hyena loose on it. And not just any hyena, his pet hyena.
That's right. The guy keeps a fucking hyena as a pet.
Rapp turned and started for the office.
You worry too much, Kent. You need to learn to relax.
Chapter 27 The Principality of Monaco.
What do you think? Claudia said, stopping at the edge of the dock and spreading her arms wide.
The yacht was a good 150 feet. Its three decks glowing white in the setting sun. A gangway was connected to the back, but Rapp could see no evidence of anyone on board.
Subtle, he said.
She led the group into an expansive living area that was a sea of polished brass, gleaming wood, and immaculate furniture.
There was even a futuristic wet bar along the port side.
Before everyone starts thinking I'm insane, she said, turning to face them. This actually is pretty subtle in the context of Monaco. And it doubles as a getaway vehicle. Plus, should we need to get rid of any evidence, I have a chart of some of the deeper waters in the area. There's a helicopter pad and a speedboat that can be quickly deployed if necessary. Finally, it has enough bedrooms and bathrooms to accommodate all of us.
Crew, Rapp said.
Congolese. They'll be arriving tonight. I've worked with them before. Good sailors, discreet. And between all of them, they probably speak no more than 10 words of English.
Very thorough, Azarov said. Claudia's smile was a little forced. She was still terrified of the man.
I have to admit, Donatella said, the little French girl has come through.
Hell yeah, Black agreed. This is what I'm talking about.
I've had people watching Terry's and have photos of everyone going in and out, Claudia said. There's a tablet on the bar with the pictures.
Grisha, could you take a look and see if you know any of them?
He sat on one of the stools and slid the device toward him.
We've had one change in the situation since the briefing in Juba, she continued. Two bodyguards have come in from Saudi Arabia. They're both former Saudi army and have worked for Bin Musaid before. They're with him at his brother's house now, and I think we can assume they'll go with him if he leaves the compound.
How are they getting paid? I thought we got everything.
He had them on retainer. There was nothing I could do about that.
So are we considering them civilians? Black asked. Or can we take them out?
Claudia, Rapp said. No terrorist ties. Just former soldiers making a living.
There's your answer, Rapp said.
Great, Black mumbled.
That could make getting Bin Musaid out of the hotel room more complicated, Rapp said. If they stay in the car or in the lobby, it's not an issue. But if they decide to post in the hallway, we've got problems.
Agreed, Claudia said, turning on a big screen TV and connecting her laptop.
A picture of a luxurious hotel suite appeared a moment later.
We've rented this room at the Metropole for Donatella to take the prince back to. We also have the one next door.
Do we have a shot of the hall outside?
Of course.
She switched the view and Rapp took a few steps forward, examining the details.
I wouldn't stand next to the door if I were them. I'd go to one on either end of the hall.
Access?
The emergency stairs are on the left of the passage. On the right is the elevator.
Cameras?
Yes, but I can disable them.
Rapp nodded.
Okay, Grisha and I can handle this.
We'll stun gun them and drag them into the room when Donatella gives us the signal.
How are we getting the body out? Black asked.
I didn't see any reason not to just stick with the classics, Rapp responded.
Laundry cart, Donatella said.
Exactly. Claudia switched to a shot of a woman in a maid's uniform pushing a cart large enough to cram Bin Musaid into.
This will be in Donatella's room, and I'm having a uniform made for her.
She glanced in the former model's direction.
Size 8?
Donatella's eyes narrowed dangerously.
Is it common for one of those carts to be on that floor? Rapp asked.
He knew the answer, but was anxious to break the death stare the women had fixed on each other.
No, Claudia responded, turning back toward him. But all we have to do is get it to the elevator. Then I can send you non-stop to the basement.
What about me? Black said.
You have a top-floor flat to the west of Terry's. There's a good-sized private terrace for you to set your rifle up on. The range is just over 500 meters, but light winds are forecasted throughout the week.
Doesn't sound like there will be anything to shoot at, he said, disappointed.
The hope is that you'll just be spotting for us, Rapp said.
But you know what hope's worth.
Claudia turned toward the Russian, who was now perusing the bar's bourbon selection.
Any luck, Grisha?
I know two of the men in these pictures. One more I have a passing acquaintance with.
Okay,
she said. Can you show me which ones? I can start getting background on their movements and find out if they have reservations at the club going forward. Why don't the rest of you go pick out your bedrooms? Black grabbed his duffel and disappeared almost immediately. Donatella took her time, pausing next to Rapp as she passed. It's a very romantic boat, no? Perhaps we should meet on the upper deck later. Say midnight. Give it a rest, Donatella. Ah, yes, the little French girl. She's quite beautiful. Why don't you ask her to join us?
Rapp leaned against the bow rail and stared out at the city lights. 50 yards to his left, a yacht even larger than theirs was crawling with noisy kids who looked to be in their early 20s. The champagne was flowing, and an increasing number of girls were abandoning their bikini tops. When he was that age, he'd thought a scholarship to Syracuse, a suburban girlfriend, and a 6-pack of Busch was a pretty good deal. He heard footsteps coming up behind him on the deck, but didn't bother to turn. He'd been living with Claudia long enough to know her gait.
Everyone's asleep, she said, slipping her arms around him. Are you coming to bed? Or are you going to join the party on the other boat?
It's a nice night. I thought I'd enjoy it for a while. Did you talk to Anna? How is she?
Good. She's on her way to see Tommy's lacrosse match with Irene, but asked me to remind you to wear your seatbelt.
They'd told her that the injuries he'd suffered in Pakistan were the result of a car crash. Now she was obsessed with what she perceived to be his unsafe driving habits. Have you ironed out all the details? He asked.
Almost. The parking garage cameras are the last thing. Oddly, they are more difficult to access than the ones in the building. It'll be taken care of by tomorrow afternoon.
With a little luck, this could actually go smoothly.
Well, I doubt it.
He turned toward her. Are there issues we haven't talked about?
With taking the prince?
No. Then what?
I'm concerned, Mitch. This isn't a black op. You've got no official standing. Have you considered the possibility that you might spend the rest of your life on the run from your former friends and colleagues?
They wouldn't find me. Most of them wouldn't want to.
Even if that's true, your life would never be the same. I lived that way for years. The constant moves, the aliases, the lack of anything lasting. And for you, the loss of your country.
I can handle it.
I wonder.
Is that all?
No.
How did I know that?
I'm worried about your team. They're all very talented, particularly Grisha. But they are not reliable or loyal. They are not Scott.
They'll hold together.
Are you sure? You have a Russian assassin who cares only about one thing, the woman he left behind in Costa Rica. If he sees any risk of not being able to return to her, he'll abandon us. Then you have a sociopathic woman who is doing this for the new life you've offered her, but also because she wants you back. And finally, you have a boy who doesn't want to work with you. He wants to be you. How long until he decides he's ready to test the great Mitch Rapp?
When you put it that way, it does sound pretty bad.
I'm being serious.
I know. It's your job to think about this stuff, and I agree with everything you said. But it's the only hand we've got to play. She looked up at him, clearly wanting him to say more.
Look, Claudia, I haven't seen Donatella in more than 10 years. We had a short relationship that we both knew wasn't going anywhere. Don't let her get to you. She just likes to make trouble.
Claudia examined his face for a few more seconds, and then took his hand.
Let's go to bed. We can take our minds off our problems for a little while.
Chapter 28. Donatella Rahn walked up the steps to the yacht's upper deck, sipping a sparkling water. She had a light wrap over her dress, but didn't need more, despite the fact that it was almost 10 p.m., Temperatures were still in the low 70s. The rest of their haphazard team was already there, but somewhat tellingly, all were occupying their own space. She did the same, settling into an empty lounge chair and taking an opportunity to study the people around her. Kent Black was near the railing doing another endless set of push-ups. He was purported to be an excellent sniper, but seemed impossibly young and desperate to impress. It was clear that he idolized Mitch almost to the point of deification. Saint Rap, the great and terrible Oz. She'd known him when he was just another boy getting into the business. Talented, to be sure, but who could have guessed what he would become? Grisha Azarov had his back to her, talking quietly into a satellite phone, as he did often. He was quite an intriguing figure, exuding calm confidence and that hint of clinical depression that she'd come to associate with Russian operatives. Claudia did a mediocre job of hiding her fear of him, while Rapp made no attempt to hide his respect. Donatella's eavesdropping suggested that Azarov always talked to the same person, but a name had proved difficult to make out. Probably Kara. But the fact that he never gave Donatella so much as a glance suggested that it could also be Carl. She turned her attention to a table where Rapp and the little French girl were discussing something in hushed tones. What on earth did he see in her? Unfortunately, the answer was obvious. There was the youth, of course. She was certainly no more than mid-30s. And then there was the beautiful face and flawless body. Moreover, she appeared to be irritatingly competent. The name Dufour was complete nonsense, of course. There was little question that this was the woman who had played a significant role in the success of the late Louis Gould. While pulling a trigger could be quite difficult, equally difficult was making sure you were standing in the right place when you did it. Gould was always standing in the right place, and it was common knowledge that he had his wife to thank. Finally, Donatella focused on Rapp, the man responsible for bringing them together. He'd never understood that they were made for each other. Instead, he'd left and taken up with that idealistic little reporter, Anna Riley. While she could understand what attracted him to Claudia Gould, what he'd seen in that goody two-shoes was a mystery. Donatella turned to gaze out over the city lights, but kept Rapp in her peripheral vision. What if something were to happen to the little French girl? Would getting rid of the competition create an opportunity for them to rekindle the romance that had been so powerful in their youth? She took a sip of her water and finally looked fully away from her former lover. No. He'd find out, and then she'd experience what so many had experienced before, the very brief and very final view down the barrel of his Glock. The chime of a phone sounded, and Claudia picked up, speaking a few unintelligible words into it before disconnecting. The prince has left his brother's compound and is driving in the direction of Terry's. Azarov looked between the front seats as Rapp eased into the crowded parking lot of Monaco's most exclusive club. The former CIA man was wearing an inexpensive suit and had pulled his hair back into a neat ponytail. Combined with his general build and constantly sweeping eyes, he looked much like all the other bodyguards shuttling their employers to Terry's. Of course, those similarities were an illusion. He was unique. And as such, utterly fascinating. Azarov had done very little in his life beyond training. His athletic talent had been identified at a young age, and he'd been taken from his home in favor of a Soviet biathlon camp. Later, he'd joined the Russian Special Forces, where he'd learned and applied an entirely new skill set. Finally, he'd gone to work directly for President Krupin, continuing to hone his abilities with some of the most accomplished coaches in the world. Rapp had enjoyed few of those advantages, lacrosse and track in his early years, then a relatively short involvement in triathlon. No, He was a far rarer animal, a pure talent. How Azeroth had been bested twice by the American despite his haphazard training history, age, and almost comically thick medical file was difficult to fully understand. What he did understand, though, was that Rapp could be as good a friend as he was deadly an enemy. It was this realization that had torn him from Kara and the life they had made together. An opportunity to observe Rapp up close, and the excitement that he missed more than expected, were just ancillary benefits. The American was someone who could be trusted to stand with those who showed him loyalty. And there could be no better ally than the one man better at this game than himself. "Can you see Grisha?" Rapp said, veering away from the valets and finding a space that allowed a view of the people entering Terry's. "Yes, but I don't know any of those men." Rapp spoke into a phone patched through the BMW M5's audio system. "Claudia, do you have an ETA on the Prince?"
"A little less than 2 minutes, if he makes the lights."
"Kent, give me a sit rep."
"I'm setting up now. 30 seconds and I'll be ready to rock."
"For God's sake," Donatella said in a typically exasperated tone. "None of this is necessary. I can just walk in there right now, and in a few minutes, Bin Musaid and I will be on our way to my hotel suite. Instead, we are sitting here waiting for someone who can get Grisha in. I've done this 1,000 times, Mitch. And guess what? I somehow managed without you."
Azarov glanced over at the woman in the back seat with him. She was unquestionably one of the most alluring creatures he'd ever seen. But that came at a price. Her magnetism wasn't produced just by her beauty. There were many equally stunning women. It was the sense of danger she exuded, the sharp edge that became a bit more ragged with every passing day. There was little doubt that at one time she and Rapp had been involved, and it was even more obvious that she would like to see that relationship rekindled. The fact that Rapp was so tightly tied to Claudia was unnerving the woman more than she was willing to admit. Donatella was at an age where her irresistible power over men would soon begin to fade, a painful realization that would be magnified by the way Rapp looked at the younger Claudia Gould. Would those issues translate into recklessness? Could she be trusted in a fight? Interesting questions, but not ones worth asking at this point. While he wasn't in the habit of relying on other men's judgment, he made an exception for Rapp. If the American felt she deserved a place on this team, it was likely that she did. Kent Black's voice came over the phone again.
"I'm set up and have eyes on the Prince's vehicle. Give me a second, and I should be able to get a head count."
Donatella Ron only half listened to the ensuing discussion, instead watching two girls walk across the parking lot toward the door. Both were in their early 20s, thin, tall, and expensively dressed. The one on the left, while wearing this year's Chanel, didn't seem comfortable in it. The other was even worse, looking dangerously unsteady in ancient Jimmy Choo's. Fresh off an Eastern European farm, she suspected, looking to use the gifts nature had provided to build a better life. They entered without challenge, but ultimately would be of little interest to anyone outside of the bedroom. And even then, she suspected their talents leaned more toward slopping pigs. "Okay," Black said over the speakers. "We've got 2 men in front and 1 in the back. They're about to take the left into the club's entrance." "Roger that," Rapp said. They watched Bin Musaid's car pull in front of the club as a valet rushed to open the back door. The Prince stepped out, not exactly keeping a low profile in his red-checked headdress. The attendants were obviously familiar with his habits, and none made a move to park the car. Instead, the bodyguards pulled into a space close to the door. "Did you get a good look at him, Donatella?"
"He's hard to miss."
They waited another 5 minutes before Azeroth tapped the back of Rapp's seat.
"There, that's Klaus Alscher. I've known him for years."
He got out and crossed the lot, feigning surprise at running into Alshur. After a warm handshake and a few introductions, he disappeared inside. "You're up, Donatella," Rapp said. "Be careful." "This isn't the Gaza Strip," she said, opening the door and stepping out. Unlike the girls who had entered earlier, Donatella neither teetered nor looked uncomfortable. She moved gracefully across the lot, aware of how the light played across her silk dress, and of the men watching her approach. She gave one of the bouncers a seductive smile, and he stepped aside to open the door. The interior was what she expected, marginally stylish and wildly expensive. Girls like the ones she'd seen in the lot were everywhere, on the prowl for a wealthy man who might be interested in lavishing them with gifts, or perhaps even setting them up in an apartment for a secret long-term relationship. She understood these women better than Claudia ever could, because for a time, she'd been one of them. Azarov had managed to maneuver his companions into a tactically viable position and was getting a fair amount of attention from the young women around him. They'd be probing, trying to determine his wealth and station in life. If they succeeded, he would quickly become the most sought-after man in the bar. Not only rich, but a marked improvement over the pot-bellied Arabs who made up the majority of the clientele. Laughter burst out from the east corner of the room when a young man jumped onto his chair and began gyrating wildly to the sedate music. Donatella allowed herself a bemused smile and moved toward the bar. Bin Musaid was standing at one end, surrounded by friends and the requisite contingent of women. He glanced in her direction, and she met his eye for a moment before turning her attention to the bartender. He brought her a martini that she sipped while intermittently engaging and dismissing the men who approached her. Whenever she sent one away, she would steal a glance in Bin Musaid's direction, and every time she did, he paid increasing attention. The truth was that the girls in this bar were sheep, and while hunting sheep could be mildly amusing, Bin Musaid was a man who would find hunting a tigress far more diverting. Chapter 29 I am Prince Talal Bin Musaid. Both Donatella and Azarov had microphones on them that fed through the BMW's sound system. Rapp glanced at his watch when he heard Bin Musaid introduce himself to Donatella. 8 minutes 42 seconds since she'd walked into the place. She hadn't lost her touch. He cut back the volume on Azarov's conversation about Venezuela's economic meltdown and half-listened to her coy banter. There was no reason to worry or second-guess. She'd play with him for a while, get him worked up, and then inside of 45 minutes they'd be on their way to her hotel suite. Rapp watched the flow of traffic in and out, memorizing the positions of drivers waiting for their clients. It was impossible to know how many were armed and how many just handled the wheel, but it paid to learn as much as possible about the operating environment, even if his role turned out to be nothing more than watching Donatella sashay to Bin Musaid's car. The conversation droning from the speakers was the most interesting thing on the menu, until two Volvo S90 sedans cruised up to the entrance. The light from the building passed through them, illuminating an interior that caught Rapp's attention. Each contained 2 men in front and 3 wedged into the back. All were bearded and appeared to be between 25 and 40. An advance security team for some heavy hitter? Rapp glanced back, hoping to see a limo hanging back. Nothing. "Kent, are you seeing these 2 Volvos?" he said into his radio. "Yeah, I got 'em. What's up?" "Probably nothing. But stay sharp." The valets opened the doors, and the men began stepping out, taking pains to stay facing the car. What were they hiding? "Finger on the trigger, Kent." "Who are these assholes? A bunch of Arab soccer players?" "I don't think so," Rapp said, opening his car door a couple inches.
Finally, one of the men was forced to move away from the vehicle in order to let the next one out. When he did, he opened his coat and swung an assault rifle into firing position.
"Take them!" Rapp shouted, throwing the door fully open and leaping out.
The bouncers went down with the first bursts of automatic fire, followed quickly by three men and a young woman congregated at the entrance. The terrorist who had pulled his gun first was slammed against the vehicle by what seemed to be an invisible force, but was in fact a round from Black's 50-caliber sniper rifle. Another was spun around when Rapp hit him in the right shoulder blade, spraying rounds across the parking lot before dropping behind the lead Volvo. Black took out another just as a group of the drivers Rapp had identified earlier, including the ones who had arrived with Bin Musaid, started running toward the building with guns drawn.
"Too soon," Rapp said under his breath.
Six of the surviving terrorists were going for the door, leaving one behind the vehicles in anticipation of the bodyguards coming up behind them. He fired on full automatic, mowing down all of them before they could get within 15 yards. One of the drivers had hung back and was shooting over the hood of his car, but fear was getting the better of him. He ducked down to reload as Rapp took careful aim at the man firing around one of the Volvo's rear bumpers, but was forced to dive back into the car as three of the men about to enter the building concentrated fire on his position.
"Donatella, Grisha, you've got 6 men coming in on you," Rapp said, "all armed with assault rifles."
He slid back out of the car and aimed between the window and the pillar at the lead Volvo. The driver east of him had reloaded and was shooting again, but still not managing to hit anything. On the bright side, he was giving the terrorist remaining outside something to shoot at. Finally, the Tango went for a better position and was forced to break cover for a moment. Rapp's round hit him in the face, while Black's impacted his torso, dropping him on top of a dead parking attendant.
"Kent," Rapp said, "see that bodyguard shooting from the cars east of my position? Pin him down. I don't want him coming up behind me."
By way of answer, Black rammed a 50-caliber round into the edge of the door the man was hiding behind. A good third of it was ripped off, and shrapnel sprayed across the asphalt. Apparently that was enough. He ran for the trees at the edge of the lot, while Rapp sprinted toward the building. He kicked one of the doors and looked inside. Two bodies lay on the floor in the opulent entryway, but it was otherwise empty. Gunfire echoed from deeper inside, with enough rounds expended to create a gunpowder haze in the air. He leapt over the bodies and passed two more corpses before coming out into the main bar area. Most people were on the ground or seeking cover behind overturned furniture. The scene seemed to slow as Rapp swept his Glock from right to left. One shooter was down, likely the work of either Azeroth or Donatella. But he could spot neither of them. A man appeared from around the corner and began sprinting across the room. His extraordinary speed made him easy to identify. Rapp fired toward Azeroth, missing his ear by only inches. The Russian didn't flinch or bother to look behind him to see if Rapp had hit the terrorist who had been coming up behind him. Instead, he swung his gun awkwardly toward a man shooting at a group of young people huddled in a corner booth. The seemingly desperate shot fired from beneath his arm hit the man in the neck, spraying blood across a massive mirror and crumpling him. There were only 3 shooters left, and they seemed to recognize that the momentum of the battle had reversed. Instead of continuing to fire at every viable target, they were shouting at each other to spread out. This wasn't a random terrorist attack. They were looking for someone. Rapp ran toward the bar, grabbing an injured girl as he passed and shoving her beneath the table. He finally spotted Donatella and Bin Musaid in the southeast corner of the building. She was screaming her head off while the prince cowered behind. Her right hand was in her purse, undoubtedly wrapped around the Beretta Nano inside. But for the time being, she seemed content to play the damsel in distress. A barrage of automatic fire began pounding the polished wood trim near her, and Rapp dove to the floor as she fired, hitting the Tango in the leg. Rapp didn't bother to check his momentum, instead sliding toward the terrorist, zeroing in on Bin Musaid, who was so focused on his target that he didn't even notice Rapp coming to a stop only inches away. The CIA man was actually able to press the barrel of his weapon against the back of the Tango's head before pulling the trigger. In his peripheral vision, Rapp saw another terrorist using a young man as a human shield while he tried to get a bead on a fast-moving Grisha Azarov. The Russian had a clear headshot, but didn't take it, instead firing through the hostage's stomach and into the shooter's left hip. Not ideal, but understandable. The hostage would survive, and Azarov's cover as an energy consultant wouldn't be jeopardized by a 1-in-1,000 combat shot. With no similar concerns about anonymity, Rapp hit the Tango in the back of the head as he was falling away from his hostage. That left one alive by his count. He was out of view, though, so that meant he was Azarov's problem. Rapp sprinted to where Bin Musaid was now trying to wrestle the gun from Donatella's hand. He grabbed the Saudi by his silk collar and shouted at him in Arabic, "Forget the whore, Your Highness. We have to get you out of here."
Who are you?
The king charged me with your safety, Highness. Now get up. We have to go. Rapp pulled the man to his feet, and they started running toward the front door. Bin Musaid was terrified and unaccustomed to moving fast, causing him to stumble with nearly every other step. They were only a few feet from escaping when a shot sounded. Not the undisciplined automatic fire that had been echoing off the walls since he'd entered, but a single, carefully aimed round. Bin Musaid's feet went out from under him, and Rapp was forced to drag the man across the polished floor. He was still conscious, but the wound in his lower back was bad enough that he wasn't going to be able to continue under his own power. Rapp lifted him into a fireman's carry and headed for the door, talking into the microphone hidden in his shirt cuff.
Kent, I'm coming out carrying the prince.
Roger that. You're clear to the car. Don't try to get out of the parking lot the way you came in, though. It's a complete clusterfuck. Back straight up and go through the bushes. If you don't hit any trees, it's about 20 yards to the road.
Copy.
Very few people had managed to escape the building, but most of the ones who had were foregoing their vehicles and running for the edges of the property. That left Rapp a clear path to his car, and a welcome amount of privacy as he shoved the wounded Saudi through the passenger side door. A few moments later, Rapp had the engine started and was reversing through Terry's expensive landscaping. When the BMW finally jumped the curb into the street, he drifted it 180 degrees and slammed it in drive.
Mitch, you've got a vehicle coming hard at you from the southwest corner of the lot. Might just be someone looking to tag along on your escape route, but I wouldn't bet on—
Black's voice was drowned out by the sound of automatic fire and the ring of impacts against the BMW's rear end.
Can you do anything about them? Rapp said.
No angle. You're on your own, man.
Rapp pressed his foot to the floor and was shoved back in the seat as the vehicle accelerated down a sweeping hill. The stench in the car suggested that one of Bin Musaid's intestines had been punctured, and Rapp glanced over at him. The pallor was obvious even in the dim glow of the instrument lights, as was the amount of blood that was soaking into the upholstery. More concerning, though, was the Volvo in his rearview mirror. There was a man standing up through the sunroof, and Rapp could see the gleam of his weapon. So far they were out of range, but the driver was taking insane chances, nearly rolling over the steep embankment to the right every time he cornered.
"Did you hear those men speak, Your Highness?" Rapp said. "They sounded Iraqi, and there's no question that they were after you personally."
"Hospital," he responded weakly. "Hospital."
Rapp had seen enough people in similar shape to know that he wasn't going to make it. This would be a short interrogation, and he needed to focus the man. To that end, he eased up on the accelerator and let the Volvo get close enough for the shooter to shatter their rear window. Bin Musaid's feeble scream mixed with the roar of the M5's engine as Rapp accelerated again.
"Your wound doesn't look serious," he lied. "And I think I can lose the men chasing us, but it'll be hard to hide you from them. They know that I have to take you to a hospital."
"Who are they?
Do you know anything I can use? The king has made it clear that you're to be kept safe at all costs."
Bin Musaid started to cry.
I betrayed him."
"Who? Who did you betray?"
"I gave money to ISIS. I supported their effort.
His voice faded. For a moment, Rapp thought he was dead, but a volley from behind jerked him back to consciousness.
Nassar! It has to be!
Nassar? Do you mean Ali Nassar? Bin Musaid nodded, and then coughed violently, spraying the steering wheel and Rapp's right hand with blood.
He drained my